definitely a crazy morning, but I couldn't be, you know, more excited to start a new chapter in my career and go be a part of an amazing organization that I've heard nothing but great things about, and a team that, you know, playing against, I know how talented they are, and, you know, it's not a team, it's a team that's ready to compete now, and they're ready to win and go for it. So I couldn't be, you know, happier to go join that.
Happy March Madness Day. It's the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Justin Cuthbert. That was Matt Chapman. The new son of the city. By the way, how excited would you be if you were an Oakland A's player that got traded to the Blue Jays, right? Like, considering the track record, you'd have to think, do you think it goes with, because it could go one of two ways. If you've ever played on a team where you have a winning tradition, there's this, like, added pressure, right, of, hey, don't let us down, keep the streak alive, don't blow it. But also there's the whole confidence of, but we do always win. So I think it's kind of one of those things for Matt Chapman coming here is, hey, buddy, if you just do the Blue Jays thing here, they traded you because they didn't want to give you money, and they traded you to the place where the guys that are like you get the money. Actually, Donaldson eventually did, but his story was a little weird. But either way, you're going to have success. How do you think he feels about that?
I think he probably feels pretty good. I think that quote was pretty accurate. I think,
but like, baseball players are superstitious, right? what's the character's name from Major Leagues that has the shrine set up?
Pedro Serrano.
Yeah, that it's like one of those situations. But the Blue Jays are the shrine for Oakland A's players. They're all praying to get traded to the Blue Jays. Yeah. That's their shrines in their locker.
You've also got to see a little bit of, like, you saw what just happened with your teammate Matt Olson, right?
Yeah.
Hey, he went to a real franchise, and he got paid handsomely. And I don't know that the Jays are instantly trying to work out a long-term extension with their brand-new 30-year-old third baseman who has 2 years of control left. But I think you like your chances better, and you like, you know, the writing's on the wall in Oakland that they're once again in the asset sell mode, and there's rumors that Frankie Montas could be next out the door and things like that, which immediately I was like, well, the Jays have a history of trading with the A's. Maybe you could get in on another A's guy. I think we're done on the pitching front, though.
It's the lineup, too, though. Like, if you're Matt Chapman, you're coming in.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have to be the 40 homer guy that batting fourth and has to prove myself that way. I got to do what I do best, which is play incredible defense, which I can do probably in my sleep, and I'm going to get RBI opportunities, and I'm going to have the chance to build myself a case for my next contract. So yeah, I think he's probably pretty pleased right now.
Yeah, he's averaged about 80 RBI per 162 games for his career. A little under that. Hit the over, whatever. Like, he's going to hit sixth or seventh in that lineup, even if he repeats last year, which was his worst offensive season, where he was a league average hitter overall. He still had 72 RBI then. I think up if he's not over 80 RBI hitting where he's going to hit in this lineup, something's gone wrong.
Don't you guys miss when RBIs mattered, though? When it was a cool
matters
stat?
Matters to your payday.
Yeah, you would go, I guess it just, that is one of the things that I have not liked about the analytics era of baseball, was just, oh, hey, all the stats you grew up with, average and RBIs, don't worry about those. Those are stupid stats. You're stupid if you even bring those up. And I go, but I like them. I was raised with them.
See, you know that I'm a baseball nerd and a big
You're one of the ruiners. I was looking at you when you ruined
RBIs.
No, but I'm
not. I just think you
wins.
You don't,
pitcher
RBI,
wins, Dad.
RBI is not an evaluation tool. It's a descriptive tool. You don't look at RBI and be like, oh, well, that guy's the best. But you do say, that guy knocked in the most runs. That happened.
Yep. Hey, yeah, that's
Someone's got to do it.
That just made me feel a lot better. What made me feel a lot better, too, was just yesterday I went down to what's now Meridian Hall, used to be the Sony Center, for those of you that didn't know, because that place has been renamed quite a few times, so keeping up with it. I liked when I bought the tickets, and I went, where's Meridian Hall? What exactly is... Oh, I've been here a million times. I went to a comedy show last night. I went and saw Tim Dillon, and it was the first time that I'd been to a live stand-up show since before the pandemic, obviously. And then I went out after to a bar and watched March Madness games and the Raptors, and it just felt like spring is right there. You know, it was a little chilly last night, but still, you go to a bar, and there were people in there watching March Madness, and there were dudes in the bar who had gambled on March Madness, and being in a room full of people laughing, just a completely packed house, right? Meridian Hall, packed. That's what, 5,000 people, 4,000 people, somewhere in that range, that hall? For a comic, everybody laughing. It just felt communal. Like, it really did feel a little bit like the city was coming back. And I know that we do that from time to time and get emotional and get all preachy about the end of the pandemic. And we've done this thing before. And it's up and down and return to sports, return to things. But, man, last night just felt normal. And it felt like a real March Madness run was happening. I know, Blake, you've got your tradition today. This is what I love about this time of year. It's been one that's a little bit tougher over the past couple because I think everybody has traditions. But, yeah, this is just the optimism that's in the air in the city right now with the Blue Jays stuff, with March Madness being here, getting out, seeing shows, concerts being back, you know, just being able to do stuff. It was just – yesterday was awesome. I was just very grateful for yesterday where I went like, wow, this is – you know, you're sitting in it and you forget that there are these just simple kind of pleasures that you can have that were taken away for a while. And yeah, full capacity meant stuff to me. And getting rid of masks soon is important. And I know you can still wear yours if you want or whatever, but it just, yeah, having at least the option of doing that is so crazy after what we've been through these last couple of years. And it just, yeah, not having to show a vaccine pass to get into the hall. And it was just, it felt normal. Like, it just really did. It felt like a normal night. People buying beers, mulling around a hall. Great stuff. Great, great stuff. And I cannot wait for this weekend of just 4 days of complete debauchery for us to crawl in here on Monday after watching March Madness and gambling and the up and down roller coasters of riding. Like, I bet Notre Dame last night. I went to double overtime. Blake's texting me because I went to the bathroom. I had a nice little chunk of change on Notre Dame. And I went to the bathroom because I thought the game was over. And he's blowing up my phone that Notre Dame's alive, and, you know.
You send me a text mad, like, oh, I can't believe this bad beat. Ron Harper Jr., the Hooper.
Bank shot.
Yeah, and then Blake Wesley comes back with the answer to send it to a second overtime. Listen, that game was amazing.
I love Blake's.
Like, you know that I don't pull my attention off the Raptors often when the Raptors are on, but the second screen dominated for a little bit there. That game was awesome.
Yeah, it was a really fun game, and it was the perfect lead-in for the tournament. To start with a double overtime game that ends on a sequence where the Rutgers ties it with a three, and you go, oh my God, and then classic college basketball style, just a putback, you know, a little putback rebound ends the game with a second left, and you go, woo, March, we're here, March. Okay, so Blue Jays. Because yesterday was also a roller coaster. Yesterday was March Madness for Blue Jays fans, essentially. Like, what an up and down day that was. We start the day with our show, which is, I think the Jays just traded for Matt Chapman. And then the guy who's announcing it is supposed to be on our show. We're moving him around. We're grabbing pieces. We're grabbing guests. We're getting excited. Blue Jays got a guy who Ed Sprague said later on Blair and Barker could be the best defensive player in Blue Jays history. That's Ed Sprague's quote on this guy. Maybe that's not true, but he's certainly in the class, right? He's in that tier of glove that could put him as one of the best players, if not the best guy ever at that position, defensively. Later that day, as we're following rumors, we're doing Freddie Freeman watch. That's what my day sort of became, was, man, I hope Freddie Freeman doesn't go to the Rays or the Red Sox, because that would be kind of a bummer. No, he ends up last night going to the Dodgers. That's electric, too. Like, what a win for Blue Jays fans that you don't have to – you didn't dream on the guy.
So great, right? Any NL answer, yeah.
But dreaming on him to be a Blue Jay and picturing him as a Blue Jay only to see him be the first guy the Tampa Bay Rays ever pay – would have been annoying, you know? Or the Red Sox just, I think, Cuthbert, it was you that said anywhere but Boston, and I totally agree with you. There's something worse about him going to Boston. He goes to the NL, and Carlos Baerga, the man who was on with us yesterday, the man who announced the trade for Matt Chapman, drops on his Instagram Live that the Blue Jays have an 85% chance of landing Jose Ramirez to play – at second base before the season starts. Now, this is coming off of a Ken Rosenthal report where Ken said that the Blue Jays were still inquiring into Jose Ramirez and they were looking into him playing at second base, that the Matt Chapman deal did not mean it was done, but it was going to take a hefty price. And now we're in this position where you're starting to dream not only of a roster, you're dreaming of the roster. Like, this is bananas. If they add Jose Ramirez, have you guys seen a mock batting order with Jose Ramirez in it? I posted one on my Instagram story, and I stared at it for, I'm going to say, 2 hours yesterday. Like, I just stared at it for 2 hours yesterday. I kept looking at it, looking at it, looking. It was beautiful. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. Honest to God. It was actually, that's art to me. If they get Jose Ramirez, I might just get that tweet that, you know, or that Photoshop blown up, framed and hung in my apartment because it's so beautiful to me. So this is my question for you, Jets, this morning. Did the Matt Chapman trade change your perspective on what the Blue Jays should do asset-wise? Because part of the celebration of getting Matt Chapman was, hey, you get to save some money, which we do care about as fans because it just means that there's more money to spend in other places later, right? It's not like I care about what Rodgers gets to do with that money later. Oh, they're wealthier. The stock price. No. But the money matters. They didn't trade top-tier prospects, though, and we talked about a lot yesterday. Hey, they keep Gabriel Moreno and they keep Aurelvis Martinez, and now you have multiple paths, right, to get better. Maybe one of those guys ends up in a trade. Maybe one of those guys ends up supplementing your organization if a Vladdy or a Bo Bichette does decide to go to free agency and ends up walking from this organization. Maybe one of those guys is a stud. It's 2 years of Jose Ramirez. You trade those guys, and all of a sudden, yeah, the winning track is two seasons. Did yesterday change anything for you guys? Because, like, I will admit, I was pretty hesitant to – I'm very hesitant to trade Gabriel Moreno track. And now this morning I woke up and I went – I don't care what they trade. Go get Jose Ramirez. And I know Alec Manoa's name was bandied around. Obviously not that, because you're not trading off the roster. But I'm saying, again, if it's talking, we're talking prospects and Nate Pearson, I don't know what is too much for me at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And obviously there are limits to these things somewhere. But here's the thing. One of the things that we need to frame when we talk about, hey, you're adding this many wins or you're adding this to a team that's already X good, is the marginal value here gets bigger and bigger the further along the win curve you go. You add Jose Ramirez to an 80-win team, it's not that big a deal. That 80-win team becomes a better team, but you're probably not, you know, at least not in the old format, probably not jumping to a playoff position. You add Jose Ramirez to a 95-win team, and suddenly you're a 97 or 98-win team, and every fraction of a run matters in what's going to be a tight playoff race, your willingness to pay should be higher the better a team you are, right? Like, the window is more open today than it was at this time yesterday. And to me, that should nudge you toward being even more aggressive. Now, yeah, if you're talking about, you know, the package that gets kicked around I think Buck Martinez said on the radio, like, oh, it was Manoa, Pearson, Mourinho, or something like that. Like, that gets a little hard.
By the way, though, I do think that was a legit ask by Cleveland. I think Buck's reporting there is accurate. That's something that I heard from more than just Buck Martinez yesterday. And I don't think that everyone was listening to Buck Martinez on MLB Radio. This came from a couple of different places, and I don't know.
No, and the ask should be big. He's very good.
Yeah.
But so I, you know, that's a little. That's a tough one because then you're pulling from your major league roster as well. And you're pulling from your first guy called up if things go down. I think you're looking at that one. I mean, first of all, if you're adding Jose Ramirez, it's probably a scenario where you have a Grichuk deal lined up as well for budget reasons. You know, Biggio probably becomes your extra left-handed hitting outfielder at that point, since he can play the corners a little bit if he's not outbound in a trade. And then, yeah, one of your roster guys, whether it's one of the catchers or Espinal, Biggio, Lourdes kind of guys, those guys are probably outbound. But yeah, it's Jose Ramirez. We were selling ourselves on Jose Ramirez when there were multiple holes in the infield. There are fewer holes to fill now, but you still could use a switch hitting bat in the middle of the order. He's capable of playing second base defensively. And yeah, your window's even more open now. You should be more willing to pay for Jose Ramirez today than you were yesterday. Now, they won't admit that in trade discussions. They would play the opposite card leverage-wise and say, well, we just got Matt Chapman. We fill the hole. We don't need as much now. From a pure, like, projecting them forward to the playoffs standpoint, though, yeah, of course you want Jose Ramirez.
So yesterday was a roller coaster, right? Like, ups and downs. More ups than downs, but definitely some downs. And I think the downs...
What were the downs? We won the wake and rake yesterday. Bing bong. Cashed the checks for everybody.
What downs did you have yesterday?
Huge wake and rake wins, by the way.
Schalgren has a shutout.
Down. Yeah. The down was Stephen Brunt. The down was Stephen Brunt saying on our show before we had all the guests talk about Matt Chapman that, you know, it's not a certainty that Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. are going to sign massive extensions and we never have to worry about them not being Blue Jays, right? So I got that in the back of my mind when the Ramirez report comes out that the Blue Jays could still be in on him despite going and getting Matt Chapman. So I'm thinking about the importance of the next 2 years. And for that reason, if we're talking about prospects, I am ready to spend them. I mean, let's make the best use of the next two years, not because I expect those two to leave because Stephen Brunt mentioned it, although Stephen Brunt, but this is such an opportunity. And the thing is, which makes me even more in the camp of spend these prospects, is that this offseason to this point has been a clinic from the Blue Jays, from the Berríos extension, to going out and getting more than a suitable replacement for Robbie Ray and Kevin Gausman, to adding more pitching without giving up anything unless I'm missing something in the compensatory category, and of course the trade for Chapman that didn't include your top two prospects, and is Jordan Groshans their number three prospect? Didn't include him either.
Depends who you ask, yeah.
So they basically didn't take from this pool that we've been talking about being so impressive. And yet they still have that chip to play. And if you can play that chip and maybe not even take from those top two, is that possible? I'm not sure. But if you can use that prospect system that you've barely touched to get the perfect completive asset to this roster for the next 2 years before bigger conversations happen, you win a World Series before that, how can you say no to that?
Yeah, I'm there, and I know that we're all excited, and I know that we're caught up in this moment of, holy crap, the Blue Jays are returning now in less than a month. It's going to be down at the Rogers Center. It's going to be a Friday night. Could you imagine what it would be like having Jose Ramirez get announced, right? Like, what are those tickets going to cost if that's the Blue Jays team, if Matt Chapman and Jose Ramirez are injected into a roster that starts on a Friday? I look at this and go, Freddie Freeman not joining one of those three teams in the American League East. All three of those American League East teams right now being pretty quiet, right? Like, the biggest move of the offseason so far has been arguably a lateral move for the New York Yankees. The Red Sox just lost Chris Sale. They have not loaded up on anything. They're just kind of still the same team. The Rays are the Rays. They're obviously going to be good. All these three teams, by the way, are going to be great. They're going to be really solid. That postseason run is going to be amazing. But nobody's done anything like the Blue Jays right now. Nobody's pushed in. Nobody looks as complete as the Blue Jays right now. I still think Toronto has to be serious about the bullpen. They've still got to figure out an arm or two there. Like, right now, it looks pretty thin, and it's a lot of what could be's. And we already know that bullpen arms are lottery tickets anyways, so the idea that one guy was good last year means he's going to be good this year is don't think that. Go get more arms. Mm-hmm. You need to go make sure you get more arms. But there is just, we talked about opportunity cost yesterday, and I just look at this window right now as, hey, 2015-16 were fun, but you didn't win. You didn't win. And you have a real shot to do that right now. You have a real once-in-a-generation pair of prospects in Bo and Vlad. You've got a balanced roster, a group of guys that seem to really love each other, like each other, a city that loves this baseball team, that's willing to, frankly, spend through the nose for this baseball team, which has to matter for these guys, knowing that they're going to be able to recoup at least a bunch of the money. Like, if you're an advertising partner, who doesn't want to be affiliated with the Blue Jays right now? This is very, like, Raptors 2019 playoff run, where all of a sudden everyone's on the bandwagon. I think that Gabriel Moreno, as much as I like everything you hear about him as a prospect, and as much as he could come back to haunt you, 2 years of Jose Ramirez at second base on this team, That to me is worth it. That's not you're chasing a wild card bid, right? Midway through a season, and you're hoping like you can finally get some ticket revenue for a playoffs. No, no, no. When you're building a World Series contender, where you're at this place, I think you do it. And how ironic would it be if these guys end up completely emptying the cupboards prospect-wise after how their tenure started here in Toronto, which was being furious with Alex Anthopoulos for emptying the prospect cupboards and going all in.
Here's the thing about a prospect cupboard. There's another draft this year. There's another draft the year after that. You think that your player development, like obviously you've had some pretty good luck drafting and developing guys, or not luck, but you've done that well. I don't know. It's a renewable resource. It's not infinite, but it's renewable. You get a draft every year.
They had it in a situation where when 2016 these guys came in here, they didn't feel as though they had any prospects. And look at, I know they did a great job and they deserve credit for the job that they did building up the farm system, but look how quickly it got built back up.
Mm-hmm.
Look how quickly, and I'm not talking about Bo and Vlad, because Bo and Vlad, those guys don't even really get credit for them. Those guys do not get, Bo was their draft year, but it was the management group ahead of them that was bullish on getting Bo, and Vlad was already here. But if you look at how quickly they built everything around it, it's possible to do that. You just saw, like, you can turn around a baseball club with prospects and money pretty quickly. Pretty damn quickly if you have the right front office. Remember how it felt in 2017 when you were going to 2018? Well, I remember going to the ballpark in 2018 going, well, the thing about this year is Kendrys Morales can't be that bad. That was the opening day show. Kendrys Morales can't be as bad as he was last year.
His batted ball profile.
Yes. Hey, he could be better. There's also a scenario where the starting pitchers they have, if all of them go four wins over projection, they could end up in a wild card conversation.
If all the guys who aren't good are good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And they turned that around into the team you see before you today. This real World Series contender. So I get it if you don't want to trade Gabriel Moreno. I get it if you feel like there's a prospect pool that's too much, but to me, I'm calling Cleveland, and I'm saying, listen, we'll give you Gabriel Moreno, we'll give you Nate Pearson, we'll give you Alejandro Kirk, we'll give you Lourdes Gurriel Jr., and we'll let you pick from some of the other pitching prospects that we have. How does this not get it done today?
Can I be honest?
We're not giving you. We're not giving you.
They can have Christian Kirk too. I don't care. If the Browns won Jags. Him via the Jaguars somehow, whatever.
The Jags are already looking to dump that contract. They're already shopping it around. They want to get off it. Man, how crazy has it been, by the way, that we've had all these different items that have been going on that we haven't even touched. We haven't even been able to touch. We do a 4-hour show. It's NFL free agency. There have been tons of big moves. Like Baker Mayfield's out there right now, penning letters of goodbye to the Cleveland Browns. We can't even make a minute to touch on it because there's been so much.
Can't even fit it in the A-list.
Can't even get it in a 4-hour show to talk about Baker Mayfield and how right I was all along. Thank you, Cleveland. Thank you. You knew it was coming.
The local basketball club is as hot as it gets, and 25 minutes into the show, we haven't gotten to them yet.
Hey, that's
how much going on.
We are going to talk Raptors today. Before we do that, though, a couple quick Leafs items. So, yeah, I think we're all it always makes me feel a little bad when we all agree like this unanimously. But, yeah, I think, again, Gabriel Moreno has to be on the table right now. Based on where the Blue Jays are at. And yeah, Carlos Baerga, please don't play with our hearts like this. 85%. Freddie Freeman, 70% was one thing. You know, that one changed. He said 70%. 30% is enough room for error, right? Like, nobody got 70% on a test and thought, wow, I really did it. You know, I really, really did it. But if I got 85% on a test, that was going up on the fridge. So this better happen.
I never got marks that low. So I don't really know.
Yeah, it's sort of scores. 85%. That's like, wow. Can you believe it? That's what astronauts get.
What happened to the other 15%?
Yeah. No. Okay, so Schalgren, he gets the net tonight. It's the St. Paddy's Day game. They go from the Winter Classic to the green setups. It's my last show before the trade deadline. I'm off tomorrow. The only way I'll come on tomorrow is if the Leafs end up doing something pretty wild. But
you'd come on for Jose Ramirez.
Well, yeah, that's of course, buddy. Is Jose Ramirez? They're gonna This could be bad because I'm going to drink all day today and watch March Madness. You guys, it's going to have to be like the movies where you go in and you find a drunk and you got to sober him up. Like, he's like a lawyer and they got to sober him up before a trial. It's
just, here's dry toast and a coffee.
Yeah, exactly. A bucket of cold water in the face. It's going to be one of those situations.
I never understood the coffee. Like, it does the same thing as alcohol. Like, never mind. Just go on. Coffee doesn't make sense for that. Water makes sense for that.
No, you're nuts. Coffee works. Coffee makes you alert, wakes you up. It's about the mental game when you're desperate like that, okay? You just need a little bit of coffee, a little shot to the brain. So there's a bunch of stuff from 32 Thoughts that was posted late last night that I want to get to. But I think that I'm set in my ways in terms of what I would like at the trade deadline. And this is it. I did my dream board for the Blue Jays. So I'm going to do my dream board sort of for the deadline. The Leafs have to get a goalie. I've said that all along. Sjogren, it's a great story, but you need another lottery ticket here. I really believe that Mrazek is done. You can't go back to him. There's no moment where you're going to feel comfortable putting him in a playoff game. You missed as an organization. You need to treat it like Nick Ritchie. And I don't mean Nick Ritchie in the trade. I mean Nick Ritchie to the Marlies. Nick Ritchie getting waived and going down and nobody picking him up. That's what you need to do with Mrazek until the offseason. He now is an offseason question mark for you. I don't think that you trade him now because the asset price would probably be so high to move him in trade that it's got to be kind of a perfect deal that arises for you to do it. But I'm saying go out and get a goaltender, but don't overpay for one. There's no need to go out and get our Marc-Andre Fleury. What we have learned through this stretch and what I think we continue to learn in this city is that yeah, goaltenders are really hard to get a grasp on. If you get one, they can get hot like Jack Campbell last year, but it's a really, really, really hard thing to project. And if there's one thing that you kind of give Kyle Dubas a little bit of, I don't know, reprieve for signing that Mrazek deal, you could look at it one of two ways. One, how could you ever give a guy a three-year contract when he doesn't have 3 years of track record of being consistent and his style and all these different things? But you could also go the other way, which is, well, goalies are really hard to pin down, and the fact that you missed on one, that's a position that you're more likely to miss on. Either way, he's done. You got to add a goalie. I don't think you should go up to the Marc-Andre Fleury tier. I think you should be in a tier of guys of trying to find value and be looking around the league and say, hey, we value three or four guys pretty much the exact same way. Whoever ends up coming at the lowest price, that's who we're going to end up taking. My preference, who I think is the highest ceiling, is Varlamov. I think that actually is the one guy where you would bring him in and he would become your starter. But that requires you, A, eating money or having them eat money, and B, dealing with Lou Lamoriello and your Kyle Dubas. It feels like he's not going to let you have anything for cheap here, right? Like, there's going to be no favors done. So that's the first thing that you need to get done. Number two is I really hope they don't trade for a defenseman. I just don't see the market. If I'm wrong, I'll be happy to be wrong. If there's a defenseman with term and that's a top four defenseman, great, do it. But I have yet to see that name. And Hampus Lindholm, I don't watch Anaheim Ducks games every single night. And I know he's a good defenseman, but I don't see how he fits with this team. I don't understand where you're putting him onto the roster where all of a sudden this makes sense, unless it involves straight up Jake Muzzin on the outgoing and you're asking them to take that contract off the books a year early. And that to me is very, 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 very bold. So I don't see where the Hampus Lindholm fit is. But when we're talking about right shot D, I don't see anybody that's a needle mover for this organization. And if you look at what the price was yesterday for Ben freaking Sherratt, I don't want to be involved in that kind of a move, and I don't think the Maple Leafs should be involved in that kind of move. However, I want to see them get a forward. That has now become priority numero deux for me. Get the goaltender, but number two, you got to go get somebody to play with John Tavares. You need to optimize the weapon that you have down the middle. He can still play, okay? He's maybe not the same guy that he was in an Islanders jersey where he could elevate anybody, but he's a somebody, and you got to go out and get John Tavares an extra player. You got to figure something out where there's a little bit more lineup flexibility so that it's not just like him and William Nylander as your secondary scoring. I think the Leafs got to go out and actually spend their asset cost in an area where there seems to be a little bit more depth, and that's acquiring a left winger for John Tavares.
Okay, so a lot there. Yeah. Dream board.
It's a long list.
Dream boards have become a thing, right? So I think if we're going dream board and top of the dream board, we got to talk about the Leafs like they have problems, right? They have problems now and in the future. Can you address those problems? Because you have to address your problems eventually. So one of the problems is in net with Peter Mrazek. And one of the problems is I feel like they're a defenseman short, and you've got Jake Muzzin as a declining and potentially like pretty severely diminished asset. So dream boarding, you know, can you solve one of those problems now? It's unlikely, right? We don't see that right in front of us. There are a lot of rentals out there. They're not guys with term. But if by some way you were able to move Mrazek in a deal that brought back a defenseman with term, then you spend the cost, right? Then you spend the cost to do that, whatever that may be, whether it's a first-round pick, whether it's one of the prospects from the NCAA, whether it's Nick Robertson, Topi Niemelä, whatever. If you can find a way to address issues that you have to address eventually now to help for this season, you do it. Again, top of the dream board, probably a bit fantastical. So
I just feel
what do
like
you
the
do
opposite,
then?
Like the Blue Jays thing. Like we just had this conversation about the Blue Jays, right? It's like, you move in right now and you cash in all the prospects. Like all three of us, none of us are adverse to trying to cash in on prospects, right? Like, and I know the sports are different and this one has a salary cap and whatever, but I just don't feel like I would be pretty sad if the Leafs moved a Matthew Nyes, you know, in a deal that involved moving cash around and bringing in a defenseman that doesn't necessarily have a perfect fit. Like, you know what I mean?
No, it has to be perfect.
It really does.
Dream board is perfect. If it's not to the dream board, it is perfect. And again, if Peter Mrazek can go in any deal, you might have to pay a little bit more, and maybe that's not a terrible thing.
You might? You do.
You definitely do.
Yeah, you do.
But in terms of, like, what's considered less, I feel like I look at things completely different than you. I think a defenseman is still my number one. I don't think they have enough there. I think it's worth pursuing help at forward, but I wouldn't necessarily look to John Tavares' wing to do it. And, I do think a goaltender is worth... I just think they need a little help from the depth, right? First and third lines have been terrific for the last 2 months. Great the entire year, really. There's options there for Tavares, whether it's internally, whether it's looking at a Matthew Nyes to come up and play potentially in the playoffs. We've seen the Leafs try that before. That fourth line is really struggling. And I feel like they could just add a pop of energy and physicality to that. That guys like Wayne Simmonds and Kyle Clifford haven't been able to do. And Tyler Mott's one of those names out there. If they went out and got Tyler Mott, a good penalty killer, a guy who could bring energy to the fourth line, I think that would be a bit of an upgrade that they're missing and would allow them to move the chips around a little bit more to try and get more out of John Tavares. And then it would force you to have some pretty hard conversations with guys like Simmonds and Kerfoot. Maybe in the dream board scenario, Alexander Kerfoot goes somewhere else because he's taken up too much of the pie for what he's offering right now. If it is rentals, a defenseman is still the guy. But I don't think the Giordanos, even Justin Braun, like I don't know if it's worth putting a really decent asset in play. There are intriguing names like Jacob Middleton that I admittedly don't know much about. But I feel like you need another guy, whether it's a middle pairing, third pairing, just to make sure you have the insurance. Because right now they are optimized, it seems, with what they have. But what happens if there's an injury? It all falls apart. They need another body just to make sure, as insurance for Labushkin, as insurance for Liljegren, as insurance for Jake Muzzin, they need one more defenseman.
Sure,
it doesn't
but I'm not
have,
paying
it can't
for...
be Sherratt. It can't be in that. It can't be what they paid for Sherratt.
But Justin,
it's got to be in the middle.
This is completely different things. But this is completely different things. When we're saying go into the deadline and go get a defenseman, I don't think anybody would ever push back that you go out and grab a depth defenseman for a middle tier asset draft wise or prospect wise. Like that's just kind of like almost a hockey anytime trade. That's the equivalency. But that's the equivalency of a spring training invite, right? Like where you go, hey, there's no such thing as a minor league deal. That's the same thing with adding depth at the deadline. If you trade a fourth round pick or third round pick, whatever, that's depth. You do those things. What I'm talking about is I don't want to see the Toronto Maple Leafs overpay for a defenseman that doesn't fit. They've already done that before. They gave up Nazem Kadri. They gave up two seasons of top tier, under the cap, incredible Nazem Kadri because they overpaid for a defenseman that did not make sense for them in a trade. And then they double down on that by adding the Kerfoot contract. By adding a forward, what you're missing here is that you do create depth. you do create a fourth line. Like Alex Kerfoot as a fourth line guy, that works. That really works for you. On an all-in season, if he doesn't go out the door, having him and Nylander in that line scenario that I outlined, like, you agree, they have chemistry. I think we have to look at these things a little differently of, hey, the Leafs can't assemble that perfect playoff team that we all want where they've got the four defensemen that eat up all the minutes that you feel confident in and the fourth line that's the, oh, they go out there and they shut things down. What did the Golden Knights have the other year where it was Ryan Reeves and Belmar, right? Where they go out there and they crash the front of the net. They can't just overhaul the team and make it that different. And that's what I'm saying is just take advantage. Agree. Take advantage of what you have and try to optimize the pieces that are already in place. Try to optimize William Nylander by giving him the flexibility of being on different lines and try to optimize John Tavares by going out there and finding someone that you think fits better with him. To me, that's way easier than overpaying in a market with defensemen where, like, nobody's out there. If there were guys out there, then Ben Chiarot would not be going for a first and a fourth. Like, that's the way it absolutely is.
He went early, and we're going to ask – we got Frank Cervelli on later. We're going to ask him about what the Manson and Chiarot deal say about the market. But what you're proposing is splitting up Nylander and Tavares, correct?
I'm proposing that you have that be an option. You know, so right now it's not really an option.
If you do put yourself in – to create that option, you have to basically surrender to the notion that William Nylander is going to play on the fourth line because you're not breaking up that third line. Under any circumstances are you
breaking up that third line, though.
Or the key components of that third line. So yeah. you got to find like in order for it to all work to have William Nylander and John Tavares on the same team, they kind of have to play together under what it is right now.
You're acquiring a forward and you're trying that forward with those two guys. My point is that in having this forward, you have the option of going, we can pull a line that is Kasha and Tavares and forward X if it's not working with Nylander and give you flexibility of saying these guys might work out better. And then you have a line of Kerfoot and Nylander with player X, be that a Simmons, be that a Spezza in some moments, be that a Robertson if they really feel like this isn't a showcase and he's ready. You have that flexibility. I just want roster flexibility where you can change up this team and you can lean into who you are, which is potentially having four lines that can give you offense. That's something that they haven't had.
Throw out a name so I understand more clear what you're looking for.
I think that Janrock from Seattle is probably the number one guy that everyone is probably circling right now and saying, hey, this is the kind of name that you're looking at here.
So a Yarncroc type, because he went to Calgary last night for a lot.
He got traded yesterday? I totally missed that.
Late last night, he got traded for a second and a third. So the price of Yarncroc,
but that's exactly the kind of trade I want. That's exactly the kind of trade that I want here. Like, that's the dream board scenario. A second and a third.
Heavy price to pay for him.
But it is, but that's what I'm saying.
He's not a second line forward.
I think that by doing this, by doing a trade like that, are we sure that John Tavares' line is a second line? Like, I don't like looking at these things through this binary notion of, like, this is the first line, this is the second line, this is the third line, this is the fourth line. What I'm trying to do is have a balance of three lines behind Austin Matthews' group where they can all score, where they can all contribute something that's better. And right now, the place where I see they're getting the... what do we call it? Like, surplus value is the term, right? Where you go, where are you getting surplus value? They're getting that from their third line right now. They're not getting that from their fourth line, and they're not getting that from their second line. So is there a way that you can re-tinker things where you add to somebody, where you add someone that can get you that surplus value from John Tavares again? And so that's the type of trade I'm looking for today, is I'm looking for a second and a third round pick, because those assets are not backbreakers, right? Like, that's a steep price, you just said it, for a guy that you don't believe to be a second line forward. But it also isn't a backbreaking price where you go, man, we lost a second and a third and we won't be able to recover from these things. Like, that's not a first, that's not a top tier prospect. That's what I want. That's what I want the Leafs to do this deadline, is try to get more out of John Tavares, because that's what you paid for.
And that's fair. And I think I'm looking at the same deal, but for a defenseman. I will say before we break, though, Tyler Mott could be that guy. I mean, he's got sort of, like, he's not the scorer JT Miller is, but he's got some of those same elements where he could be a facilitator. And he's a lot like Cale Yarncroc. It might be worth looking at Tyler Mott, not just as a fourth liner, but a guy who could potentially play higher in the lineup.
See, JT Miller was the original guy that started this line of thinking, so thanks to Elliot for that, because he put it out there, and I just remember thinking, that is nuts. JT Miller, how are you going to make that work? Not only is the asking price going to be through the roof, but why are you trying to load up on Tavares? You already have X amount of millions of dollars on this line. I think you got to stop looking at it that way. If you're Kyle Dubas, you cannot look at it as our second line already has $18 million on it. Why should it need more? It should be, no, you know what we need to do? We need to double down and reinvest in that line. We need to make sure that we add more to it because we've already got such a sunk cost that we can't afford to go into the postseason and have them give us what we're getting now. So yeah, go out and get somebody else. Go out and make sure that you add to this group. But that's the place where I see that you can get the most out of it. I don't think that Justin Braun is going to change, you know, your prospects moving forward. All right, we got a break because we got to talk about the Raptors. They're red hot. What happened? Something happened?
Blake, no, I was just smiling because they're
oh,
red hot.
Oh, I was like,
we'll talk about it after the break. But I thought we were past the, like, 2016 era of every day the Raptors are breaking some new random franchise record that only existed because you've been bad for so long. It happened again last night. They're finding new ones. We'll talk about that. Raptors beat the Clippers. 5-game winning streak. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. J.D. Bunkus, Justin Cuthbert, Blake Murray. So, the Toronto Raptors, 5 straight. Blake just said it as we headed in the break, is they've been buried. 4 Raptors, absolutely buried by the content cycle. They're out west. They're getting the job done. We're basically shoulder shrugging them, putting LeBron in a box and just, you know, no big deal.
Yeah, of course this team we picked to finish 500 is body bagging LeBron's Lakers. No big deal.
Of course. Not only that, it's like...
It's more about the Lakers than the Raptors, I guess, but...
They're doing this without OG Anunoby. They're doing this with Siakam getting nicknamed Pass California, which is incredible because of the way that he dominates California. They're doing this as Scotty Barnes, like, he goes on the Raptors show with Will Liu, or sorry, not Scotty Barnes, but Kevin O'Connor, who has a vote for this awards, talking about how he's leaning towards giving his vote to Scotty Barnes. You think that was tongue-in-cheek playing to the crowd?
Kevin O'Connor knows where the bread is buttered is all.
He's
very savvy.
It's a take, but it's not a take, and it really is becoming more and more a conversation, especially if Scotty Barnes and the Raptors can jump Cleveland in the standings. You look across the board, and yeah, Scotty Barnes having a lot of impact. So, Blake Murphy, where do you want to begin with this Raptors team that all of a sudden is red hot and we've under-discussed?
Yeah, so first of all, I mentioned before the break that I thought we were out of random, the Raptors have never done this in franchise history thing. They'd never won 5 in a row on one road trip before. That's because you don't play a lot of 5-plus game road trips, and road trips are hard. But to rail off 5 straight on a West Coast trip is remarkable. Like, this just does, the best teams in basketball don't do this with any regularity. So that level of consistency from these guys in these games has been notable. I think it's also notable that 4 of those 5 games were against West playoff teams or play-in teams. But the thing that stands out to me most from that game is kind of what else happened around the NBA? The Cleveland Cavaliers, Chicago Bulls, and Brooklyn Nets all lost. The Raptors are now tied for the 6th seed with Cleveland. They're only 2 back of Chicago for the 5 seed, and they're 3.5 up on Brooklyn for the 7 seed. So we're getting to a place now with only 13 games to go where not only do the Raptors have a good chance of avoiding the play-in altogether, but it seems like the worst-case scenario for them is hosting a play-in game where if you lose, you host a second-chance play-in game. This win streak has put them in good shape in how the Eastern Conference stacks up.
I got to tell you, I'm over the moon about it right now for 2 reasons. One, the draft pick. I'm sorry that I'm so obsessed with the draft pick, but it's true. I want the draft pick to be this year. Having it roll over, I've said it before, having it roll into next year is a disaster. It really is. You cannot trade next year's first round pick's control rights to Thad Young for 20-plus games. It's not a good trade. If you trade down in this year's draft, what could end up being, you know, 10 to 12 slots, then it's palatable. Then it makes sense. If you're in a playoff series and Thad Young's giving you 23 minutes, 24 minutes of high IQ, high energy basketball where you have another 6'9" wing, then you go, okay, that trade is fine. That's a good trade. It's a huge, huge, huge swing getting up into that sixth seed. Also, it's just the ability to actually measure your team in a playoff series versus a play-in game. That kind of an information is something like, how much are you paying for that? That's, you're paying a lot. You'd happily do the 10-pick drop-down thing there. So it's just, it actually feels like there are some weighty stakes now with the Raptors. And what's fun about them, and where I think that they're going to end up more in the news, Blake, and we're going to end up doing a lot more Raptors content, is that this playoff stretch, well, this playoff stretch is going to be really fun. All of a sudden catching, because when they lost to Cleveland and they fell back, what was it, 3 games?
Yeah, they were 3 back at one point, and now Cleveland.
3 back, and Cleveland has the 3-0 tiebreaker, right? Where they, it's just, it felt like it was going to be impossible to leapfrog them, and the Raptors were resigned to their fate. You kind of felt like, well, what are we going to talk about with this team down the stretch, right? Like, what's going to happen here? Are they going to fall? It felt more likely that they were going to fall into the 10 seed than they were going to get back up into the 6 seed. And all of a sudden, I actually feel as though it would be a disappointment if they were in the play-in game.
I don't know if I'd go as far as disappointment because, again, they were 3 games back. And yes, you lost those games. Yeah, but I just mean, like, let's not shift the goalposts too quickly. A week ago, we were like, oh, my goodness, they... like they're out of the playoff possibility.
Blake, that was a week ago. And what do you always say? With more information, you can change the opinion, and that's where I'm at right now. I see a Raptors team that has an emerging Scottie Barnes, that has a Pascal Siakam that's back to all NBA levels, that's got a Fred VanVleet that's getting healthier, and with at least the potential of OG Anunoby getting there on the horizon. I also look at it the same way as the Blue Jays free agency right now, where I said the Red Sox and the Rays and the Yankees didn't hit on anything in free agency. Cleveland might get Jared Allen back before the playoffs, and his situation is one in which they're actually, I think, kind of similar to OG's, right? Where they're going, we'd kind of like to opt for surgery here, but if we do, we have to shut him down, and we don't really know what to do. The Chicago Bulls are completely lost, and Zach LaVine's got some weird health stuff going on. They're just, they can't get it together right now. So I'm not so much looking at it, Blake, as the Raptors need to all of a sudden turn some massive corner when it comes to the disappointment level. It's just that I think the Raps are better than this non-Jared Allen Cleveland team and this Bulls team. Like, why can't you be better than one of those two guys or one of those two teams?
Yeah, you're definitely better. I think you're definitely better than the Cavs without Jared Allen. However, the season series is shaken out. I just don't fear them as much defensively. We see on a night like last night that as amazing as Evan Mobley is, he looks a lot better next to Jared Allen than kind of anchoring his defense himself against a team like Philadelphia, which, sure, unfair comparison. But and the Bulls, yeah. I mean, Alex Caruso was favoring his wrist again yesterday. Like, if he's back on the shelf, we saw what that did to their perimeter defense. Lonzo Ball's still not back. Patrick Williams doesn't seem like he's, you know, coming through. And yeah, maybe Patrick Williams doesn't move the needle for you a ton. But what do you need when you're talking about playoff basketball? You need defenders with size who are non-zero, who aren't zeros on offense, and Williams helps with that. So, yeah, I and Caris LeVert's dealing with an on-again, off-again thing with Cleveland as well. So, definitely some upward mobility here. I took a look at the kind of season-long snapshots to see where the Raptors are, and they're more or less – they're getting to where – we had pegged them before the year. They're up to 12th in defense on the season now, and they have been better and better of late. They're right around average on offense. Again, we can go back to the stats that they've really performed well against teams in their own tier and the top of the league. So you want to talk about, are you confident that they wouldn't just be getting to the 6th seed to get stomped by Philly or Milwaukee, or getting to the 5th seed to get stomped by Boston? This is a team that's been hell for good teams to play against. So it's really exciting. The Siakam thing is, he's on such a streak right now that I have friends texting me asking if the stats they're showing on the Sportsnet broadcast are correct, because he's already passing like Vince Carter and Chris Bosh for random stat things. I'm like, yeah, they're correct. I never would have thought to look up, you know, who has the most 20 tens and fives, but yeah, they're correct. So Siakam's on one. I didn't think Scottie Barnes had the best of games last night, other than that amazing dunk that he had, that Robert Covington wanted absolutely no piece of. But I thought overall, for a game with no OG, for a game with Fred VanVleet playing clearly hobbled still, to be at the end of a six-game road trip there, Gary Trent at less than 100% too. I thought that was a great, great win and a great cap to a terrific road trip.
It was, and it was an important one because, again, you're chasing these teams in the standing that are 7-13 in their last 20 games combined between the Chicago Bulls and the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's why there's optimism here. The other part of it, too, got to give credit to Precious Achiuwa. We haven't talked enough about him, but these are the since the All-Star break, which is only 12 games, so it's nothing insane, but he's up 5 points a game. His usage percentage is up from 17% to 24% when he's on the floor. His true shooting percentage up from 46 to 54. His free throws percent, obviously, his 3-point shooting has gone from 30% to 45%. Like, he has been a different guy. And if you're talking about the defense improving and why the defense has looked better in the absence of OG Anunoby, well, Precious Achiuwa is playing great defense. Look at that play that he had at the end of last night. Like, he is a plus-plus-plus defender who, at that size, moves incredibly well and is just a sharp defensive player. And so the emergence of Precious Achiuwa, I think, has been a huge part of this. And just, like, all of a sudden you have another reliable piece. He's totally made up for the fact that you have a complete zero in Kem Birch. Like, it's been massive that they've uncovered something in Precious since, you know what? Rising Stars. Who knew? If you put Precious Achiuwa in a Rising Stars game, you tell him he's a rising star, he becomes one. That's all he needed was a confidence boost.